Coming to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto, you are listening to the Cave of Solitude. I am your host, Eric Anthony. And this week, we are coming at you, yes, with more footage from Fan Expo 2017. And this time, it's all about a celebration of anniversaries. And, well, of course, this whole show is a celebration of the things we love. But, specifically, this time around, we are talking about Image Comics. And it's 25 years now that seven of Marvel Comics' best-selling and high-profile artists decided to unite, join arms, and collectively revolt against the status quo of what up until that time was common business practice between corporate comic book companies and their creative minds, who were really the building blocks of all the intellectual properties that we enjoy today that those companies profited from. And at that time, these artists were so hot and so high profile that there had never been comics being sold at that time at such a high volume. We're talking in the millions. And really, these guys were saying, you know what? We're not going to let history repeat itself. We saw what you did to some of the legends before us who weren't recognized or given their proper due in regards to ownership of their characters or even royalties for the things that they created. So what these guys did, they banded together. And I'm sure many of you listening know the long story of Image Comics, but if you haven't heard it before, basically the artists of books such as X-Men, the Spider-Man artists, Wolverine, X-Force, the creator of Deadpool. So we're talking about Todd McFarlane and Jim Lee and Mark Silvestri and Rob Liefeld, Jim Valentino, who was the artist of Guardians of the Galaxy at the time. So all of these properties that we're really enjoying even today that are, you know, making movie companies like Disney billions of dollars, essentially. So all these guys left to pursue creator-owned projects by starting up Image Comics. Now, Image has gone through a lot of changes through 25 years, of course, but 25 years later, you know, they're still one of the leaders in the most creative comics that are coming out, the most creative comic book publishers that you can work for, and many of your favorite TV shows and future favorite TV shows and movies. I'll go out on a limb and say they all come from creators who publish through Image. So being able to sit at a panel featuring one of the founders of Image, which was Eric Larson, was extremely cool. And of course, there were other people on the panel with him as well, Jerome Pena, who's an extraordinary artist, and Tyler Jenkins as well. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. And if you are looking for Image Comics to jump into and read, it's a great place to start reading comics because the entry point is very, very easy and affordable. Remember, hit up Cyber City Comics at 1025 Steeles Avenue West in North York. Just look up. You'll see the Cyber City sign there, like a beacon of comic book hope. Just tell them that Eric Anthony from the Cave of Solitude sent you. And if you're looking for a book to pick up as a first-time Image comic book buyer, I would recommend Seven to Eternity, Descender from Jeff Lemire. What else can I think of? Savage Dragon, if you want, from Eric Larson, who's on the panel. You know what? I'm going to stop talking. Without further ado, this is Fan Expo, Image at 25 panel. Enjoy the show, everybody.
It's my pleasure and honor to host this Image at 25 semi-retrospective, semi-just talking about stuff kind of panel. I host a bunch of panels for the wonderful people at Fan Expo. I love them, and I also love Image Comics. To introduce our panel, just to my immediate left, Mr. Tyler Jenkins. Applause. Please clap. To borrow a line from Jeff Bush. To his left, Jerome Pena. To his left, a young upstart making his way in comics, Mr. Eric Larson. And at the far end, Raf Yanko. Let's hear it for Raf. So there are so many different ways to do these sorts of things, but I kind of like, as I was telling Raf before we started, a little bit of the kind of game show lightning round sort of thing to start us off. Everybody who has worked for Image has a different experience of being an Image creator, of being an Image fan, of interacting with Image for the first time. Eric, of course, you were there at the very beginning. But whether it is your first experience with Image having been a gig, as a reader, as a fan, what was that first brush with Image Comics for each of you? Whoever wants to, feel free to jump in.
Just because I was there first?
No. We'll get to you last.
Did
you read any Image Comics? Was that it for you?
No, I don't think so. Well, it wasn't that I didn't read Image Comics specifically. I didn't, before I really got into comics, I didn't read a ton of comics, actually. And I came through going into comics purely from the art side, out of art school. I'm not sure my connection to... I can't remember, actually, my first...
Yeah, that would be awesome. Which we all can't remember? That was going to be what I was going to say. I can't remember.
I remember seeing the ad in the Comic Buyer's Guide. It was an article, and it was a picture of this event called Image Comics, and it blew me away. I was totally stunned. I was like, you know when you get excited by comics? There was a picture of Wildcats that Jim Lee had done, all his new characters, and I go, oh my God. I was like 20, 21, 22, and it just shook me. It's like, there's Marvel, there's DC, and now here's this Goliath of 7 super artists, saying, we're going to do this.
That sounds awesome.
And everybody, that's how Image was in the early 90s. It shook everybody.
All right.
It shook everybody. It was like the gods have come and made this new
sounds
empire.
Sounds pretty good.
Top that.
Jeez. I got nothing.
Yeah, for me, I was also a fan of all the artists that left. And I still have my Savage Dragon issue number 1.
I've got one of those too.
But yeah, this definitely is a fan.
Eric, the early days. I mean, there's probably a documentary film worth.
There is.
There is one
documentary
actually.
Film that you can watch. Where I can go. I don't remember it.
It's been 25 years.
What?
back in those early days, was there one of you that had a firm idea of a book that you wanted to do earliest right out of the gate? Was it Todd with Spawn? Was it you with Savage Dragon?
Well, the thing with me, Todd, and Rob is we all had our characters prior to the launch of Image Comics. I had created Savage Dragon when I was a little kid. He's a blatant ripoff of Batman when I was a little kid. And I'm not kidding. And then Rob had Youngblood when he was young. And had pitched it, and he was going to self-publish years and years and years ago in a company called Megaton, which is where I kind of got my start too. And then Todd McFarlane created Spawn when he was a teenager in high school. So we kind of came in with that stuff, and then the other guys came up with what they wanted to do when we were doing it. So it just kind of worked out different from different people.
That's a really good opportunity to segue into kind of digging into all of your origin stories as artists, as creatives. Does it go back to childhood, doodling in notebooks and drawing as a kid for all of you in terms of wanting to make it a vocation, or did you end up finding your way there eventually? Just whoever wants to go and jump in.
I came out of art school not wanting to do comics. We did one comic project in art school, and I was like, this is way too hard. And I knew coming out that I didn't have chops to pull off doing comics. And then Curtis Weeb, we met at a con. He's like, you want to do something? And I kind of fell into it. And then we did a couple of projects, and then we got Peter Pansvelt with Image, where we met Jim at Emerald City, I don't know, 5 years ago, something like that. So that was like my first start actually doing like comics as a living kind of thing was with Peter Pansvelt and Jim.
With the exception of SCAD and a couple others, a lot of art schools are really good at convincing you that comics is a terrible thing to do.
Oh, there was no support for doing comics at all. It was just like Riley Rossmo and Fiona graduated. Like Fiona graduated a year after me, and Riley graduated a year ahead of me. And that was it. Like, the school did not support. I mean, now they push comics a lot there. This is at ACAD in Alberta. But, when we came out, they were the only two that I knew that were, they were like, we're doing comics regardless. And that was the only kind of contact I had with it as a career kind of thing was them.
origin story for you, Jerome?
It's kind of similar. When I went to art school, comic book art was not really looked upon highly, you know, so, which was sad.
What?
They had one comic book class, and I tried it, and the teacher was horrible, so I dropped it at lunchtime, and it's different now, but they're really, like your school, they're really pushing it, and my old illustration teacher asked me if I wanted to come back and teach a comic book class. There. It was just odd, because it was just always looked at as, like, a lower form of...
get out of here with your comics. Please come in with your comics.
Yeah. But I kind of fell into comics as well. Because I kind of just didn't know what I wanted to do with with my art.
So it goes... I mean, Savage Dragon goes back to when you were a kid.
When I was a little kid, I would do comics on 8.5x11 paper that was folded in half and stapled at the side. And I just wrote and drew my own adventures of my own characters since, like, 4th or 5th grade. So I just kind of kept going from there. I did 55 issues of my own comic before I even started doing comics professionally. So I had just stacks of these just awful comics that I'd done as a kid. They're just totally terrible. And a lot of the characters that I use now are characters that I created back when I was a wee lad.
And why throw out good stuff that you can put into the sausage?
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I've created these characters throughout the years, there will be different periods where I'll be influenced by different stuff. And so it's always different when you go, well, this is a character designed when I was 9. That character is going to look way different than a character you design when you're, 54. So when you've got these characters from all these different ages and all these different times, they can look wildly different from each other, and that way you don't have the Marvel movie superhero thing where everybody looks like they shopped at the same costume shop, where you can actually look at it and go, oh, this guy's got kind of a spandex kind of thing going on, and this guy's got a whole different kind of thing put together. So, but I just started when I was really young. I drew comics all through high school, and then when I was 19, me and a couple friends self-published a fanzine, and we sold it through the mail. We took ads out in the then trade publications for comics buyer's guide and stuff like that, and a couple people who bought our comics through the mail were starting up their own comic book companies, and they contacted me about doing work for them, and that's how I got in. So I was 19 when I started doing stuff for those guys. And you just kind of work your way up the food stream there. And eventually I was doing comics that people read and cared about. So it took a while, but that's all right.
Was there the interest in making it a profession there early? Or that it took a while for you to...
No, that was it. I wanted to do comics since I can remember being able to draw. I was just like, this is what I got, so this is where I'm going. And it was always making up my own stories and drawing my own characters, so there's never been anything else. I've never had a real job.
It's a good way to live.
That's it. So I can't draw on all those life experiences. I have to make it all up. I've done nothing.
How far back does it go for you, Ralph?
I always wanted to be a comic book artist, too. And I guess my first big break was, do you remember Wizard magazine? They had a contest, the Cable cover contest, and I came in second, and a publisher, Entity Comics, liked it, and they were looking at a submission I had sent them at the same time that issue came out. So this was before email, before the internet, so they sent me a letter, handwritten letter, saying nice stuff, and then I pitched them a comic book, and they became my publisher. And yeah, so it was like the Wizard magazine second place win, got their attention, and then I went from there.
Yeah. Wizard magazine was good for a lot of people in that regard.
Yeah, I also won. You remember Hero Illustrated?
Oh yeah.
I won a contest for that, and my prize was supposed to be a hardcover of Neil Gaiman's The High Cost of Living. but they went bankrupt and never sent it to me.
All right, hold on. So Death in the High Castle, they still owe you that? I'm going to look into this. So there was a time before Image Comics. I know that we don't like to think about that time because it makes us sad because Image has brought so many of us so much joy. I kid, of course, but you know, one of my favorite runs of Defenders, actually, you worked on, Eric. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of really great Marvel and DC books that came before the Image creators first wave came, and I wonder if there are any really foundational you know, comics runs, individual issues. A lot of people like to ask people, what was the favorite first comic you read? And a lot of people don't even know, or they can't necessarily remember, or they more fundamentally remember the comic that they read that was like their point of no return. That was it. This is whatever this is, Kurt Swan, Superman, Lee Kirby, Fantastic Four, you know, any number of different things. Is there something like that for you that was like, that was your point of no return? This is something that, you know, you were going to be filling boxes with.
For me, it was Frank Miller's Daredevil. It was like his fantastic run, like, you know, with Bullseye and all that. I go, wow, oh my yeah. God, these stories.
That was good stuff.
So amazing. Like, he just blew me away. And then it was like, I got to do this. I got to try and be like Frank. And he was writing and drawing his own stuff. And, yeah, that was it for me. Uh-huh. It was like trigger, you know.
Do you have a comics comfort food, Eric?
Well, my dad bought comics when he was a kid, so we grew up with his comics and just destroyed those. So he was getting comics from the 40s and 50s. So he grew up with all the old EC comics and Captain Marvel Adventures and all these Barks, Donald Duck stories and stuff like that. So we had all that. When I started buying comics, it was in the 70s, so my first comic that I ever bought with my own money was Incredible Hulk 156. And that was sort of the gateway drug that just was like, all right, I'm into this stuff. And so I just started getting comics. I started filling in all sorts of different collections and just buying everything I could get my hands on.
Jerome, what about you?
I was really into G.I. Joe comics as a kid. So the silent interlude issue, which is I still look at it today, yeah. Just for not just for inspiration, but for storytelling lessons. It's very just amazing to me still.
I have to, you know, momentarily brag on you. Your work in Seven to Eternity evokes so much of the best stuff that Larry Hama did in those G.I. Joe comics.
Oh, thank you.
So there you go. Rick didn't pay me anything to say that. By the way, you can get variant copies of that. But yeah, the work that Larry Hama did on those those G.I. Joe comics was astonishing.
Amazing, huge influence.
I liked him better than the cartoon.
Oh yeah, it's way better, way better. Yeah, even as a kid, I preferred the comic book to the cartoon. It just felt it's like grittier and more real. Because my grandfather was a World War II veteran, so hearing stories about that versus what I saw in the cartoons didn't always really match, you know, even for a kid. So comics.
How about you, Tyler? Any stuff that takes you back, as it were?
I was Hellboy, actually. That was when I saw that. That was like, oh.
It was the seed of destruction for your life.
Yeah, it made me think about what comics were completely different. Well, I hadn't thought of it before then at all, but it was like, oh, that. And then I sort of at the same time in art school, was like discovered that and like Ashley Wood type stuff and like very, you know, unusual stuff that I didn't associate with anything. That's what it was for me for sure.
I've got a couple more questions for these guys. If any of you have questions, we'll turn it over to you. And anybody have questions? Just let me know if you do. Otherwise, I'll keep rolling along. I'm going to keep rolling along. I had some stuff prepared. Nobody had? Okay, all right. We'll go ahead.
Oh. Knowing what you know today, after 25 years, if you could go back in time, what would you change at Image at the beginning?
Question was, if Eric could go back in time 25 years at the beginning of Image, if there was something that he would change, what would that be? That sounds like an Image comic, honestly.
It's got to go back in a DeLorean, though.
That's gonna be Eric's B book that he writes and has somebody else draw.
Nah, you know, I wouldn't change anything, just because it is what it is. And if you start tampering in time like that, you never know where it might diverge off and cause some horrible mutation.
1963?
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff that you go, oh, I wish this would have got finished. I wish this would have turned out better. Yeah, but I'm more of looking forward than looking back kind of person. So, I'll make it better next month. That's kind of the way I look at it.
The place that we're at now, Image has really provided people a really great place to collaboratively put together stuff that, I mean, Image exists because these are the kinds of books that couldn't happen to the big two. Period. End of story. I'm curious about collaborations that have been really rewarding for you guys as you've worked on the creator-owned side of things. I mean, Eric, I mean, you are your own collaborator.
Yeah, I got nothing.
But you collaborated with some guy named Todd.
Yeah, that was a nightmare.
Tell us about the nightmare. Take us into the nightmare.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah. You want to open up those wounds?
Well, I mean, that was a joke so that nobody asks that later, but positive collaborations. I mean, is Rick Remender really as big of an asshole as I think he is, Jerome?
Yeah, it's all right, good. It's very accurate.
What is that collaborative relationship between the two of you like?
I mean, I think more so than collaborators, we're friends because we've known each other for quite a while, and we've worked on quite a few projects together. So we actually are friends now versus just business partners.
So just enemies. What's the process? Do you get a full script? Do you get a plot? What do you get?
Full script, yeah. Okay. But it's very open to, he leaves it open to me to interpret it how I want.
Okay.
And he gives suggestions and, yeah. But it's really good.
There's no, for the next four pages, there's this amazing fight and that's it?
No.
Yeah. Much more detail.
It's broken down a bit. Okay.
Yeah, it's
well,
broken down.
Go back to the beginning of the collaboration. I mean, working with Rick, what prompted that? What got you two working together?
We were both living in San Francisco at the time, and one of his studio mates emailed me and just was saying that he liked something that I did and was wondering if what I'm doing now, and at that time I wasn't doing anything, so he was like, oh, I got a...
Timing was perfect.
Yeah. He's like, my studio mate is, he's writing for Image Comics, and he likes your work, so he forwarded... exchanged emails, and that's how we got to know each other that way and started that way.
Once you got introduced, was there something that you guys initially bonded over, whether it was Rick going, here are the six different things I got in the shoebox, what do you want?
No, it was actually over music. We share very similar musical tastes, and we hung out, like his studio was actually very close to where I was living at the time, so I got to go hang out with him and actually see him in person and converse that way, and it just was very easy connection.
Tyler, take us back to the beginning of Peter Pan's or Faust. Where how did that come together?
We were at Emerald City, me and Curtis, and
a lot of stuff happens in Emerald City. I've found like a lot of people just happen to run into each other.
That's true, and we were there, and he was working on Green Wake at the time. And I think that was just coming, you know, I think they were just finishing that. And so we actually pitched a story to Jim, and he hated it. He said it was terrible. And so we were like, oh, well, shit, we gotta do something better right now. So we pitched him Peter Pan's Faust that weekend. He's like, oh, yeah, we'll do that. So I was like, oh, phew. So that was, that's how we started working together. And it's been, working with Curtis has been great. We've worked together. I mean, it's been like we've known each other for 9 years now. We've worked on lots of stuff, and we've become very close friends over the years, and working with Jim Valentino has been awesome too. Like, I can't ignore the fact that he took that risk on us, A, doing a war book, and B, a monthly schedule where I hadn't. That was totally unproven. So I can't. That's been awesome. I mean, he's been great. He's been great to us.
Ruff, you worked with this miscreant Matt.
Matt Hawkins.
Yeah,
yes.
Terrible human being.
No, he's actually really. Yeah.
he was trying to say something nice. He couldn't summon anything.
I want to say he's great. He became great, you know? You know, we became really good collaborators. You know, you start off a bit rocky, you know, and then you both go down the same path, you know. He likes to give bare bones description of what he wants, which is good, because then that gives me a lot of freedom. And what he gets back, he's always pleased with what I give him. You know, so he'll give me a page of plot, and, you know, fight scene, 3 pages. You know, and then I get
oh,
to,
nice.
I get Curtis definitely.
So it's like real Marvel style,
really.
Yeah, and he'll say, then she uses the gun to break the glass. So I got the fight scene has to end with her doing that, and the water comes in. You know, so he'll let me choreograph it. He's really busy. You know, he's president of Top Cow. He's got a lot of books going. So I guess he likes to never...
Raph, you do 3/4 of the work. I'll do 1/4. How's that?
That's fine. I kind of like it.
It's actually awesome if you've ever worked plot style.
Yeah.
It's you think, oh, you're giving this guy so much more work, but it's so much more freeing to just be able to do whatever the hell you want to.
I find, indeed,
when I'm working from full scripts, it's just like, oh, God.
And sometimes working off some writer's fight choreography is impossible.
Yeah.
You have to have taken the same Krav Maga class they had.
Well, also you get writers who just simply don't know what can be done in a panel. They don't understand. Like, panel one, she walks across the room and picks up a hairbrush and brushes her hair and looks out the window. And it's like, wait a minute. Panel two.
We're doing motion comics, or
what's going on here? How's this work? You know, always the classic. She shakes her head, just like, how do I draw that? That's not cool. Or two faces. That'll work.
Well, no.
Just put jiggle lines on there. She looks like a Flash. Blurry head.
Well, on the working with other people note, even though, you know, Eric, you are your own one-man band on Savage Dragon, when you were Image Publisher, you worked with a lot of people kind of herding the cats.
Yeah.
And I don't want to dredge up the bad memories, but I'm sure that there are probably some good ones there, you know, whether it's a book that came about, you know, under your watch that you helped shepherd into existence that was really rewarding or not.
Well, at that point, I was fairly hands-on because I think some of the stuff performing wasn't that hands-on, so I was like, all right, I want to make sure that this stuff is really going. And so I was helping people design logos, doing cover sketches for people, and in some cases they had titles that were accepted but weren't necessarily the best names on their books and stuff. So, for instance, the Luna Brothers had pitched a book called Heroine, which was about a heroine, a woman hero. And I ended up talking them into, why don't we call a book something other than that, since not everybody is that literate, and that word can be spelled several different ways. So we ended up changing it to Ultra, and that was the launch of the Luna Brothers doing their book. And it's just talking through people and various things, like, let's how about a logo that's readable? Let's try that. That sort of thing, you know, or put it on the cover so it actually, you can tell where it is and what it is, so people can ask for it by name. Just some of the real basic stuff that needs to be done and was done at that point. But we have a bunch of good people that came through during that time. Jonathan Hickman sent in his first book, Cold, just came in the mail with everybody else, and it's like, all right, let's get this thing going. So there's some good people who came in there, and some stuff you were able to take various people and put them together and put books together. So that was some fun.
That presents a nice way into talking a bit about the. This is where my jet lag's catching up to me. I had the thought a second ago. Looking at the hands-off nature of Image, I mean, it is you against the world. It's your team that you put together. Each creative team working on a book. I mean, unless you're within, you know, a brand like Skybound or Shadowline, you know, you're kind of your own little mercenary unit. Over the years, to start with Eric, you know, have you seen that there's a common thing that people maybe don't immediately think about that they need to? Whether it's, oh, we need to have a letterer for this,
yeah,
who's
that's,
legible,
that's
we
common.
Need a colorist.
That's
that
common, with just legible things, or not thinking about titles that people can pronounce is nice, you know?
Peter Pan's House was a big problem,
yeah,
actually.
I can imagine that would be the case.
You know? You might have gotten some notes from him.
It couldn't be anything else. I mean, that was the entire concept. However,
yeah.
It was really a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Ask for it by name. I dare you.
The nature of it being so hands-off, whether it's work of your own or other work that you've seen come through Image, is there anything that stands out to you as this is, I mean, every Image book is an example of why Image exists and why that book couldn't exist at the big two publishers, but is there anything that really stands out in your memory as a great example of what makes Image so great? Whether it's just the basic concept of a book, the amazing art on something, an Image book that jumps out at you as something that you recommend to people of, oh, if you haven't read this, you got to take a look at this.
I can't boil it down to one because then I feel bad about leaving everybody else.
Two or three. I mean, leave it all on the table. People have money to spend, right?
I mean, because the books I read regularly are what? Walking Dead, Invincible, and then, God, now I'm totally blanking on everything, which is no good. Somebody else, save me here.
Everybody reads Saga, Paper Girls.
Oh, yeah.
I love Jupiter's Legacy. Saga, yeah. Jupiter's Legacy with Frank Quitely.
Jupiter's Legacy, yeah, with Frank Quitely.
That's a cool one.
I Kill Giants is an Image book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I Kill Giants. That's
a great one, right?
Headlopper. Headlopper's Image, right?
Oh, yeah. That's
There's
awesome.
So much Image stuff. Like, that's the thing. Jerome, any stuff that sticks out to you?
You stole Saga from
I stole Saga from you?
So I can't.
Saga takes the center square on the
Savage
bingo card.
Dragon.
Savage Dragon, good job. Good job, kiss my ass. Do we have any other questions from the audience? There we go, right there.
So, you've been writing Savage Dragon for a very long time.
Yes.
How do you stay enthusiastic about it? Do you have an ending in mind for what happens to these characters finally?
Are you trying to beat Dave Sim?
I'd like to at least catch him.
are we going to see, Savage Dragon meet Cerberus?
I doubt that.
Oh, well.
How do I keep it fresh? Well, I've set it in real time, so the characters keep getting older. And that forces a lot of change on me, which makes it so that the book is constantly becoming something different. Which makes it so there's always fresh things that need to be tackled, So it's like at this point, the book stars Dragon's son, Malcolm, and Malcolm will be 21 in October. And so I just, you just are keeping track of, how are they old are these characters, and where are they at, and where are they located, and where am I going from there? And actually, Malcolm and family, he is married and has three children. He is moving to Toronto in issue 227. So that's there you go. There's another big change that's being forced on me and forced on the book and on the characters. And it's like, okay, what do I do from here? And just keep exploring and trying to, So it's like it's a new world for him and a new situation for his family. And then just start building out, okay, well, what goes on in Canada as opposed to the United States, and what's going to be the new characters that are created here, and what could be a new situation that makes some sense.
Sillsville.
Yeah, no, it's all there, and it's all stuff that can be played with. So. Yeah. It just makes it fun.
Why did the adult change? You made it a little more adult-based.
Malcolm turns 21, and the book is now kind of 21
I'm an adult. Plus. You're an adult. We're all adults here. What the hell?
But if you go back to the beginning of Dragon and read it from the beginning, by the time you get to that stuff, you're old enough that it doesn't matter.
Whatever. Now it just was like, okay, what are we doing here? Because I can. That's the awesome thing. It's Image Comics. I can do whatever I want. Want to make an adult book? Yeah, let's do that. Want to not do that? Okay, let's not. You can do anything, which is the coolest thing about this stuff. I mean, at this point, when I'm writing my book, I just have scattered notes at best. I'm just kind of going, what do I feel like drawing today? This will be awesome. So, I mean, it's a surprise around every corner because it's a surprise to me, which is a fun way of doing comics.
Another question over here.
This is a question for all four of you. I was just wondering, if you guys have any dream projects, or even almost like a one shot, like a mini series or something, could be like anything. And, like, I don't know, like two or three companies or something. If you want to, do you guys have anything that would be like, wow, like, you know, like if I took a shot at that, I would totally do this.
So whether it's a creator-owned character, completely original thing, playing with one of the franchise toys in the Marvel and DC toy boxes, any kind of thing that you would love to scratch off of the bucket list?
Not for me.
Awesome.
The stuff for me I'm working on right now is
I
want to be
it's
working
like,
on.
I'm working on the book I want to do. I'm on my dream book.
Yeah,
I'm
right
a book you don't want to do for 25 years.
That's why people work for Image, right?
Yeah.
Because you're working for yourself.
Well, the thing that you find is that your dream books are a nightmare when you actually are doing your dream books at Marvel and DC. Because you go, oh, I have all this stuff I want to do with this character. And it's like, well, you don't get it. First, you're probably not going to do that character. And then if you are doing that character, surprise, he's been replaced by some kid with his hair sticking up in the air or whatever. I mean, it's like if I was doing the Hulk now, I'd be like, that's not the Hulk. I don't want to do awesome Hulk. I want to do incredible Hulk. You know? It's like if I'm doing Batman, I want to be regular Batman with a circle on him, not that weird tracing around, whatever that is. That's bullshit. You know? I mean, I like all these characters. I grew up with all this stuff. It would be cool to have a run on any one of them, but, and I find a way, I kind of tackle everything with the thought, if you're not doing your favorite book, you're doing it wrong. So I just kind of tackle it that way, like make whatever it is you're doing into your favorite comic book. Mm-hmm. Just make it fun, find the fun in it. So I'm just finding whenever I do anything outside of Image Comics that it's just not as much fun as when I'm doing stuff at Image and I don't have anybody to say no to, you know? Nobody can say, you can't do that. I mean, every now and then they'll call me up and say, hey, you want to do a cover of Superman? I'm like, all right. And I draw a cover and I send it in. They're like, well, it's a good thing we like this because you're supposed to send in a sketch first. Oh, I forgot. That's
pardon
how
me,
that works.
Yeah.
Well, it is a good thing you like it because otherwise you wouldn't be getting a cover by me. That's how that works.
Right here.
This question to all four of you. Like, what's your thoughts on inking in general, like, as an art, like separated from sketching and coloring?
Ink art is something that, you know, a lot of people get the... You know, the pencil art, but the ink. He's asking
you
how you feel
inking.
About inking in general.
What do you think about inking in general?
Yo, so inking.
Yeah.
It's crazy,
inking.
Right?
It's so
awesome.
I've recently started digitally drawing instead of on paper, and the actual finished art is kind of like inking, you know? So it's like bypassing inking.
Sorry, man. Bypassing you.
Yeah.
No, it's an awesome collaborative thing when you can do it, when it works. I mean, I've worked with probably 50 inkers over the years, and it's really fun to see what other people bring to the table when you can have that kind of a collaborative process. But it just depends, because doing it all yourself is also really fun because you just have that control. Where it's like, this is going to turn out the way I want it to, or as best as I can make it.
Yeah, because that was my thought, like whether like it or you hate it, or do it on your own, or like...
With me, it just depends on the book itself. And some special issues of Dragon I've done, like issue 100, I just had a bunch of different people ink the backup stories, and that was just a lot of fun, just to see what other people do. But on a regular basis, I like doing it myself.
You guys all ink yourself, right?
Yeah. I prefer to do it myself as well, but yeah.
Well, down the line, so you've moved digital. Are you still doing original art?
Oh, yeah.
Original. I would have been shocked if the answer was otherwise. Jerome, are you...
Still analog, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, same. And I steered away from working with the colors, too. I paint everything myself now. And it's all paint. Like, I... as little digital as possible, as little working with anyone else as possible, actually.
Yeah. Which I was trying to say is he hates people. So being in this room with all of you, it's a big step for him. See, is that a guy in a Superman shirt? At an Image panel, what the hell's wrong with you? Go down the hall if you want to see Jim Lee. I'm kidding. Go ahead.
He did cover it, though.
I was curious. I've worked with other artists in other mediums, and sometimes having no one to say, who tells you no, makes the stuff back. And I'm wondering, how do you stop yourself, I guess, from...
Be bad? Well, I mean, if an image creator wants an editor, they got to hire one. I mean, Chaykin was telling me that he has somebody he specifically hires to do that. Sometimes having the reins be real loose, you run off the horse analogy that I just put together and failed to complete. You know, do you find that freedom can let you, you know, go a bit far afield at times?
I think most of us work either with somebody or at least run things past somebody in some form. You guys work with writers, right?
Yeah.
So also, they're going to be going, saying, wait a minute.
Yeah.
This is not what I want.
Yeah, and we also have an editor on 7 to Eternity, so he does a good job of trying to keep the book on schedule as best he can. So that helps, definitely.
My current book is with Boom, and I have editors. But the editors I have there are very much more like collaborators. They can say, like, they don't ever tell us no or anything, like, it's completely ours, but they'll, like, suggest, well, if we put that many F-words in here, it's going to get this rating, and that's going to be a problem, but that's it. Like, they'll suggest stuff, I'm very inconsistent with a lot of pieces of it, like, you know, weird costume things, and that's mostly what they do, and they must help us massage the story, but it's never, I actually love having an editor, and the editors I work with are awesome, but they don't tell me no either. But it's I never come across it that way. Like, I mean, I've certainly turned in a lot of shit, but it wasn't, an editor wouldn't have saved that.
No, I mean, I have my own editor on the book, so I've rejected plenty of my own stuff just because I'm like, I don't like the way that looks either, so
yeah.
Out you go. I mean, ultimately, the people who are reading this stuff are the real editors, because they're not going to buy it if it's not any good. Mm-hmm. What do you got?
we don't have an editor. It's just Matt Hawkins and myself. And I guess Matt will pass it around after he dialogues it for input, and I'll give him input on the dialogue too. But he's never barked at anything I've drawn for him, thank God. Thank you, Matt. Yeah.
Question up here.
What would your advice be for a creative team that's pitching their book to Image?
Advice to a creative team pitching their book to Image. Maybe you're one of these people.
Fail horribly.
Yeah, well, everybody has to fail before they succeed, right? What would your advice be to somebody pitching to Image?
Keep it brief. Yeah. I mean... They've got guidelines on the website that's just, you know, 5 completed pages, so they can know what you're doing and if you can do it at all well. You know, pick a title that's easy to spell and easy to pronounce, and, you know, do something that's fairly straightforward, so you can, you know, an image on the cover where you can tell what in the hell is going on is always a plus. Strong character designs, find a good visual hook for whatever character you're on so that people can go, oh, that's who that guy is. Find something distinctive, find something original to say.
That's what I was going to say, originality. You know, look at whatever Image is doing and what aren't they doing, and then tap into that, what aren't they doing.
Yeah, because, I mean, the potential is everything. You can do whatever you want to. You know, we had that book Chew, for crying out loud. You can do whatever you want to do. I mean, really? It's like, okay. So at that point, what can't you do?
Some of the dumbest pitches can be really good stories.
If you can do a cool job with it, it's like, all right, you say he's a dishwasher, eh?
Yeah, but he
gets it pretty clean. All right. You had me a dishwasher.
We got time for a couple more. I'll go to you next, and then you.
So, going on that vein, it seems like in the 90s, it was very superhero storyline-based that was popular in consumer drugs-driven. And it seems like like Image helped change that perspective, and over time, was there a point where you guys were receiving submissions and things and thinking, wow, this really is not the kind of stuff I'd ever think Image was going to do, but you guys still went ahead and did it, and it kind of opened up the floodgates to everything that's coming up since?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
It's really, the sky was the limit, and it kind of took, I think, The Walking Dead really breaking out and becoming huge that had other creators going, oh, I can do anything. Oh, well, let me do this. And trying different things out instead of thinking they had to do a specific kind of thing. But once it became obvious that anything can work, then it just opened it up, and suddenly we were getting all sorts of pitches for all kinds of crazy stuff. Renew?
I've been reading a fair bit lately about the next Spawn project for the big screen. Just curious if there are any other Image projects that could be coming to the big screen.
Chew
got optioned, and they're working on making Chew happen, for example. But there's a bunch of stuff that, like, if it hasn't hurt, I mean, there's so many Image series that are officially being put into production for TV, for movies, that kind of thing. You lose track, right?
Yeah, there's an awful lot. Most anything that Skybound's doing is going to end up somewhere. And same thing with Mark Miller and all his stuff. That seems to be being optioned constantly, so that's a constant thing. But most of the other times, it's really down to all the individual creators, because everybody owns their own stuff on an individual basis, so you don't know unless they're announcing it on somewhere.
Yeah, unless you know, Mark Miller's company gets bought by Netflix, you know. Yeah, that would never happen, right? It sounds too crazy to be real. If you have any other questions, we're running out of time, but hey, right over here. How do you feel about fan art? Would you like to, go into people's homes and tear it all up and destroy it?
That's great. Yeah. I love getting fan art.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
people get gigs on fan art, right?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I used to print it all the time. I haven't in a little while, but we used to run it in the back of the book, and it would be a lot of people's real early stuff would be fan art that people printed. I think I've printed a lot of people's first published art, just in the letters pages and in the back of the Savage Dragon. When I had that character creating contest years ago,
which I entered.
Which you entered?
Did you come in second place then?
But J. Scott Campbell pitched something in there, and he didn't get it, but he was there.
Yeah, he'll get there someday.
One of these days.
That lobster guy won, right? Lobster hand.
So the panel's Image is 25. Does anyone
want to
speculate what Image at 50 might look like?
Man, you sniped my last question, but good, good. I mean, I like where your head's at.
Do you also see, like, forces like Patreon or Kickstarter plugging into that in any way?
Yeah, do you see Patreon and Kickstarter as, negatives for Image, or
no,
maybe
no.
As new avenues for people
it's
to get
just
in?
It's just a different thing. It doesn't affect things as far as I'm concerned. And I mean, it just becomes this different avenue for doing stuff. So, you know, more power to them. As for what Image is going to look like in 50 years, I have no idea. My Savage Dragon's going to be pretty far along.
So here's a weird, dumb one to wrap us up. I go to San Diego Comic-Con. I know, it's terrible that I even go. But Image has this massive booth set up, loads and loads of really cool merchandise, pins, shirts, all kinds of stuff. Whether it's on a project of your own or just an Image book that comes to mind, is there something you wish there were like an enamel pin of or a baseball cap of or something like that that you wish one of your colleagues would put together that you'd,
no.
You'd snap up? No? Are we ever going to get a Savage Dragon plush, Eric?
There's a Mr. Glum plush. That's pretty cool. There's all sorts of Savage Dragon toys and T-shirts. And there were some hats at one point. There was a cartoon. It's wretched, but it's there on YouTube. So I'm pretty sure you enjoy it.
Action figures would be cool. I got a six-year-old, so it would be kind of cool if you can, like...
Yeah, there's a guy inside the tent who deals a lot with toys, I hear. Has his own toy company. Some kind of Todd. Cool. That was it. Anybody else have anything? Anything? All right. Well, if we get one more round of applause for our panelists. All four of you guys are here the whole time, right? All the way through Sunday?
Yeah.
All right. Everybody's here through Sunday. Go see them. Cross their phones with much silver. Thank you again, FanX Book Canada. The Cave of Solitude. Yo. The best that there is of what we do, E and Daft J. It's the Cave of Solitude. Reaction from the masses after they heard me rap is like Galactus in that surfer to earth to serve him Kirby crack. The black science of rhyming, riding with Grant. Cause once we tear a layer of this onion, there ain't no turning back. Attack titans in boots, Bruce with gamma rays. You can't touch this, plus this empty hammer weighs a ton like the Odin suns. So when this flow is done, I'm dropping mics and y'all.